reschedule for next week if we can for a different night, by the way, to just remind you, the end people coming. The series of Hilchot Shabbos, and Hilchot Shabbos, of course, a very lengthy, detailed, complex. Nevertheless, we have to know it. Just because it's long and hard doesn't mean you just ignore it. It's terrible. You have to tackle it head on. However, to take a little bit of the edge off, I decided that we will start Hilchot Shabbos from a part that's a little bit easier. The series of Hilchot Shabbos, and Hilchot Shabbos, of course, a very lengthy, detailed, complex. Nevertheless, we have to know it. Just because it's long and hard doesn't mean you just ignore it. It's terrible. You have to tackle it head on. However, to take a little bit of the edge off, I decided that we will start Hilchot Shabbos from a part that's a little bit easier. Not that it's not detailed and complex. That is the positive aspects of Shabbos. We are very used to discussing the negatives of Shabbos. Don't do this, don't cook, and don't write, and don't, you know. What about the do's? As a matter of fact, in the Torah itself, it says Zohar, and later says Shama. According to the Chazal, Zohar means a positive commandment, which is primarily to make Kiddush, and Shama is a negative, you know, all the don'ts. So before we do the don'ts, which will at least take up the majority of our time, I think it's appropriate that we do the do's, which is what a person should do on the Shabbos. And I decided that of all the do's, the most important of the do's is Kiddush. Kiddush is a twin cousin of the Abdullah, who will come to discuss that as well. And there's even a link between the Kiddush and the meal of Shabbos, which we'll discuss as we go. So we'll start with that. I have 3 books in front of me, so you should know what I have. I have a Shulchan Aruch, which is the most important book of all, Shulchan Aruch of Shabbos. I have a sefer called Shmira Shabbos Kilchos, so you probably know about. This is the second volume. And a book which I got recently, called The Radiance of Shabbos. What is the problem with the Hebrew language? This is a wonderful book in English called The Radiance of Shabbos, with many detailed Hebrew footnotes, but the text is doubled in English. I recommend it highly. It's a wonderful book on the positives of Shabbos. I should add that Mishnah Berurah has been translated also into English. So there are many, it's really accessible. Put the time in, even if there's a language barrier, by now it's become completely, almost completely accessible. But of course, it's only accessible to those who want to put the time in. The mere fact that you know the language doesn't mean anything. You have to put the time in. And we will try to put in some time into delving into some of the important points of Hilchot Shabbos. And as we said, we're going to start with the laws of Kiddush and Havdalah. Kiddush, according to everybody, is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. Very important. There are 2 kinds of mitzvahs. There's Torah mitzvahs, and there's rabbinical mitzvahs, but they're Rabbanim. There are numerous differences between one and the other. Kiddush, we are taught in Shas, in Gemara, is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. Everyone is required to make Kiddush. And the Gemara tells us this obligation is not limited to men, but it applies to women as well. Although there's a general rule, women are exempt from mitzvahs that say, Shazman, Yerama, from time dependent, positive commandments, is an exception. And the reason it's an exception is, as the Gemara tells us, is that it says, Dachar v'shamar v'dibur echad. Hashem said Dachar and Shamar as it were in one breath at one time, and just as women are obligated to shama, which is the negatives, because women are obligated in almost all negatives, as the same as men, so too they're obligated in the positives, the zocha, the mitzvah of Kiddush. And therefore, women and men both are obligated by Torah law to make Kiddush on Shabbos. Okay? That's statement number one. It's a very serious matter to make Kiddush. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. Now, you may ask, what's the difference? It's a Torah, it's a mitzvah, it's a Rabbanan, it's all the same thing, you have to do it, that's all. What's the difference? Well, there are significant differences between a Din D'Oraisa and a Din D'Rabbanan. Just to give you an example. Let's say that there is a household which consists of the following 2 people. A mother and her son. Father's not around. A mother and a son. The mother is, let's say, 30s, and the son just turned bar mitzvah last week. He's 13. Who makes kiddush? Who makes kiddush? So, truth to tell, in general terms, kiddush is men and women are obligated identically. A woman can make kiddush, a man can make kiddush, it doesn't really matter too much. However, the custom is that a man makes kiddush for the women of the household. In this case, however, it is incumbent upon the woman to make kiddush, not allow her son to make kiddush for her.
Even though
it's by mitzvah.
Not allowed.
She must make kiddush.
Why?
Here at the end. In order to be bar mitzvah, it's not enough to have a catered affair. It's not enough to even put on tefillin or put on a cake. In order to be bar mitzvah, you have to have two things. You have to be 13 years old. 13 years of age. And it also has to be signs of physical maturity. Puberty or something of this nature. Now, we don't conduct the physical examination of our bar mitzvah boys here in the shul. You don't line them up, turn to a doctor, nothing. Why not? After all, maybe he's not really bar mitzvah. You know, he's 13. So the answer is we follow the majority. The majority of cases, 13-year-olds have attained the necessary physical maturity and they're bar mitzvah. You know, there's a significant minority that have not. They have a right to follow the law, to follow the majority. However, Gemara says, only follow the majority concerning laws which are of rabbinic nature, which are of a lesser level. Of the laws which are on a level of Minat Torah, Midaraisa, then we are not permitted to rely upon the majority. That's what it says. I'll give you an example which you may know from it, my own family. Some of you may have been at a few bar mitzvahs that were made in my family. That took place in Parsha Zohar. Right. Maybe you were at Buda's bar mitzvah. If not, you can pay attention if you come this year to Simcha, which is again Parsha Zohar. Now, we specialize in that. All three cases, the Maftir of Zohar was not read by the Bracha bar mitzvah. Elaine, the Parsha, did not recite the Maftir. I recite the Maftir. Why? For this reason, Parsha Zohar, we are taught, is Midaraisa. It's a Zohar, and it's a Sha'asa L'cha'amalek. We don't rely on the fact that the boy is 13 to enable him to read from the Torah. Had it been a rabbinic law, we would, of course, we let him lame. We got his Shachris, Musaf, Marav, no counts for minion. But for Parsha Zohar, which is a law of the Torah, we don't rely on its majority. Yes?
This is only the things that will affect others.
Right. It only affects himself, so he can't lose. Yeah. He has enough. Yes?
What if none of those sons
has? Well, she knows for a fact that he has, and then he can make kiddush, it's not a problem. Now, there was a situation which took place not here in shul. It was someone from the shul made a weekend bar mitzvah on the part of Zohar many years ago. The boy is not going out, father, his own children. But I wasn't there, and it came to my attention later that the boy lamed the parsha's off. So I was a little bit upset. If I asked the father, you know, he said, no problem. I checked him out. He said he checked under the arm. The question was that a sufficient check or not. They don't go into the details. But he's very lucky. He checked upon the positive answer. I would never take a chance to check. You check and find a negative answer. Mm-hmm. You can't lay. You can't daven. All the months you spent in preparing for the parasha goes out down the drain. So we never check. We'd rather just settle for most of the lay. Not mistaken, we had this last year, parasha's parah. If I'm not mistaken, we had a parasha's parah bar mitzvah. Even there, I wouldn't let the boy lay. It's just that, yeah. So I think I also probably lay to myself. I don't remember what happened exactly. For the exactly the same reason, because some say parsha's parah. Oh, the kiddush is a law by the Torah law, and therefore someone who is even bar mitzvah may not recite the kiddush for his mother.
What happens parts of Dhaka that when it's flame in the summertime. There are people that come, there are people who can't make it, that they take that time to
get the parts. And if that would be the case, you would have kind of an older person do that too? Sure. Yes?
By extension of Kiddush with the same power for Moshe?
No. Because I know kids are only with the Rabbanan. The Shaila would be, what about Havdalah? This is even more sensitive because the women, we'll see later, don't like to make Havdalah. Don't like to drink from Havdalah. Okay, we'll discuss some of these sensitivities as we go. So what happens in the following? The same family set up. You know, there's a 30-ish, 30-something woman, and a 13-year-old son, who makes Havdalah. So it depends. If Havdalah is a Torah law, you have to go back again, and then the mother has to make Havdalah. If the Havdalah is rabbinic law, then the son can make Havdalah. Which one is it? It's clear in the Gemara that Havdalah is the Torah law. That's obvious. That's explicit. Havdalah, however, is not at all explicit. It's not, doesn't say clearly whether Havdalah is really min haTorah or Havdalah from the Rabbanan. It's machlokes, actually. Rambam says it's min haTorah. And Rashi seems to say it's maybe min the Rabbanan. So since we can't take a chance, they'll say Havdalah also, the woman has to make Havdalah.
But does she make for
her age? That's a different story. We'll get to those things. That's a small change. We're talking about the main...
Can the son do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. One more thing. So take it a step further. What is a 30-year-old woman and a 12-year-old daughter? Just
for,
does a
law of the cubic... Right, apply to a daughter. It's a 30-year-old woman and a 12-year-old daughter. So the 30-year-old woman has to make Kiddush Havdalah herself and should not allow her daughter to make for her. Right, that's correct.
I was told I should not make a Kiddush. I should not make a door. I should try to go to a neighbor, to a school.
If you can go to a neighbor, go to a school, that's wonderful. That's true. But if you can't, you have to make it yourself. You can't help it. You have to make a woman has to hear Havdalah. Even though she, we'll get to that. We're going to discuss it.
No, but I don't
think
people
have
been
running out of
the show. That's why.
Okay. No, we'll get to it tonight. We're just beginning.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, let's say the 13-year-old boy went to shul. Did he already have
kind of
his obligation?
That's a very good question. So we're going to come to that in a minute. The world famous question, which is raised as follows. Although we make Kiddush on wine, as you know, according to the most authorities, the requirement to make Kiddush on wine is rabbinic. There's no obligation by Torah law to make Kiddush on wine. Okay? Now, based on this, the Mogen Avraham said, if someone davens Ma'ariv, davening of Ma'ariv itself is a fulfillment of Kiddush by Torah law. It has all the features of Kiddush. What did he say? He was talking about Shabbos, and the Kaddish HaShabbos. Exactly the same way in Kiddush, the Kaddish HaShabbos. The person who made Kiddush, who davened Ma'ariv and Shul, fulfilled the mitzvah of Kiddush by Torah law. Question. Man goes to Shul, davened Ma'ariv. He already fulfilled the mitzvah of Kiddush by Torah law. His wife, let's say, didn't go to Shul, didn't daven Ma'ariv. She didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush by Torah law. Can he now make Kiddush for his wife? Well, should we say no? He already fulfilled the mitzvah of Kiddush by Torah law, so now for him the mitzvah is only rabbinic. Whereas for her, there's a Torah mitzvah. And maybe someone who, we have a rule, someone who's obligated in a rabbinic level cannot make Kiddush for someone who cannot do any mitzvah, but someone who's obligated on the Torah level. But what happens in the average situation if the husband is obligated to and his wife doesn't? How do you make Kiddush for her when he comes home from Shul? That's the question. A very serious question. This question has many answers. I'll tell you the most radical first, which is not accepted by everybody else, but this is just the radical value that it has. Rabbi Akiva Eger makes the following remark. He says he thinks that if a person said that he calls in the sefer Shabta Tova, to translate roughly to what? With Shabbos. By saying good Shabbos, you fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush by Torah. So if a woman greets her husband at the door to good Shabbos, so he said Kiddush by Torah law and davening Maariv, and she says Kiddush by Torah law by saying good Shabbos. So they're both not on the same level. They're both only obligated rabbinically. It's a radical interpretation. It's generally not accepted for a number of reasons. One reason is the Kiddush. Rambam says you have to have divrei shvach for Kiddush, and then the Kaddish HaShabbos. Not just to say good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, very nice. There's no sanctification of Shabbos is present in that phrase. But there's another reason why it perhaps is not a fulfillment of Kiddush. Namely, that the person who says good Shabbos does not have in mind to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush. The kubit of mitzvahs require what we call what? Kavana, or intention. Of course, it also could be a mitzvah don't require kavana. That's an unresolved issue. Not so clear in the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, which way that goes. But let's think of it now this way. If the woman who says good Shabbos does not fulfill the Kiddush because she lacked Kavana, well, it could be that the man who davened Maariv in Shul, maybe he also lacked the Kavana. He didn't daven Maariv in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush. He davened Maariv to fulfill the mitzvah of Maariv. And therefore, maybe he did not fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush on the average case. Some go as far as to say that even if you say mitzvahs ain't shrichas kavana, mitzvah does not require specific intent, that's if you have no intent. But some suggest that over here there's a kind of a reverse intent. By a reverse intent, because you said this prayer having in mind Maariv to the exclusion of Kiddush. Some suggest. Others suggest exactly the reverse. Since you had in mind to daven Maariv, and Maariv and Kiddush are related, as we see when it comes to Havdalah, we say Havdalah in Maariv, so Kiddush you can also make in Maariv. So Kubit, if you have your intention for Maariv is the equivalent of intention for Kiddush, and therefore perhaps you did really have Kavanah. So that's an open question, two extremes. But now we get another variable. The Gemara says in the Steps of Sukkim, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Friday night, you have to mention about Mitzrayim. Yitzias Mitzrayim. We say it every week, right? Zecher, who? Zecher, Yitzias Mitzrayim. The question is, if someone did not mention Yitzias Mitzrayim, then perhaps you don't fulfill the mitzvah. It could be that we don't fulfill the mitzvah properly in Maariv, because in Maariv we don't mention the Mitzrayim. Where? Oh, the Brewer says that that's a problem. And they suggest, well, maybe, as you mentioned Mitzrayim earlier on in the Brachos of Krishna, which comes just before the Shemoneh Esrei, that should be good enough. Okay? These are some of the issues which are found over here in the first pages of the Kiddush. Unresolved, there's no definitive answer. But the bottom line is that it's customary for the man to make Kiddush for his wife. But he is the best answer of all. Set everything else aside. Even assuming the worst case scenario. The man fulfilled Maariv, fulfilled Kiddush, excuse me, and the woman did not fulfill Kiddush. It's just terrible. He's on a rabbinic level, she's on a Torah level. No, it's a rule. The rule is called, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh. All Jews are responsible one for the other. It's a problem. The Gemara suggests, Shonim says, that women are exempt from Arvus. Women are not necessarily included in the category of responsibility. So there are two ways to knock this out. One is by saying women are not responsible for men, but men are responsible for women. What's the idea? What's the kind of prejudice in this? Simple. Men have communal responsibility. Women are exempted from communal responsibility. That's the general rule. They're exempted from community responsibility in the formal sense, as they should do things for the community. But all the mitzvahs at tzibur, generally speaking, women are exempt from. So therefore, it comes out that the woman is not responsible for a man because she lacks communal responsibility, but the man is responsible for the woman. So therefore, he can make Kiddush for her. That's number one. Number two, it's entirely possible that when it comes to Kiddush, women are responsible for men also. Why? There's no difference between men and women intrinsically. when the Farshim say, based on the Gemara, that women are not responsible for men, it's referring to a case of a mitzvah that a woman is exempt from a mitzvah. Then she cannot do the mitzvah for a man. Shofar. She can't blow for a man based on this idea of responsibility. But he can blow for her because he's also obligated to be a shofar. But Kiddush, they're both responsible. So therefore, there's no problem, no issue. So bottom line, we went through a couple of tupulim, but the final result is a man can make Kiddush for a woman, even if he davened Ma'ariv, and she did not. Done all the time in Jewish homes.
Say the woman davened Ma'ariv?
Better.
Then it's the Rabbanim, the Kiddush is the Rabbanim?
Yeah, maybe no. Depends on which side of the filter you subscribe to. The bottom line is, it's at least even better from our perspective. She could certainly make Kiddush for her in that case.
Is this only Friday night Kiddush or Shabbos night?
Very good question. We assume that there's only one Kiddush a day, which is Shabbos, which is by Torah law. Once you make Kiddush once, done. So usually that Kiddush is made Friday night. Someone slept the whole night, didn't make Kiddush, then they read a bit to Midat Torah, make Kiddush the next day. Theoretical case, but it could happen. Yeah.
Is there ever another similar case where a person, so there are two people, one who is high for the right and one that's high for the right, and we ever again look to one who's high for the right and mostly the right person?
Sure. I'll give you a case. Let's say three people ate bread. One ate only a small piece of bread, a kazayis, and two ate, a large meal. We call it today sviya. So according to many Rishonim, the achalta is savata v'erachta, only the one who ate filled is chayav by Torah law, and the others who only ate a little bit are chayav by rabbinic law. Nevertheless, the one who ate only a small amount can bench for those who ate a larger amount. The reason is the same. It's a chiyuv of arba that one's higher for the other. That's another example. I imagine there are others, but we will not go into them right now. So, let's summarize. Kiddush is certainly a Torah law. Havdalah is questionable. The difference of Torah law to rabbinic law, one as far as someone who's just 13 or 12 years old, not 100% sure yet that there's physical signs of maturity. But Din Midaraisa, you can't rely on the majority that there probably is maturity. Then the question was raised, can a man make Kiddush for his wife if he davened Ma'ariv and she didn't? That was a very good question. And there's a whole pilful back and forth, many different reasons, one way or the other, but the bottom line of it is, the answer is yes. He can make Kiddush for her.
Now, let's say the man is on the 8th to make Kiddush. Can she be
motzi
him?
Even if he's able to make Kiddush, she can be motzi him. A woman can make Kiddush for a man, no problem. Not a problem. Only problem will be, according to our recent analysis, what will happen if a woman davened Ma'ariv and the man didn't daven Ma'ariv and she now wants to make Kiddush for him. That will depend upon the various points that we brought. According to some of them, will be good anyway, and according to others, it will not. That doesn't happen too frequently. But if they need the daven, they're both daven, then the woman can certainly make Kiddush for the man. Without a question. Which the Brewer says that if it's not members of one family, would not be considered so modest. Right, that's what he's worried about. Even within a family, the traditional role that we try to subscribe to whenever possible is that the man makes Kiddush in the house.
Why?
It's a good question. The answer, I believe, is based on the Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in we weren't supposed to be here tonight. Okay. Let's see. That's downstairs. You know what the Shabbos clock is? No, I know what it is. Let me go down. This is Hatzalah. Thank you.
Would you like something to finish?
Okay. All right.
Oh
yeah, the Gemara Sukkah says that there are certain mitzvahs which a woman can fulfill on behalf of her husband. However, the Gemara has an expression called Tovo Me'eiro, which literally means the curse should come upon the man whose wife says, he's talking about Hallel or about certain other things for him. And the Mefarshim explain that the man has a primary responsibility, so he, generally speaking, should do it himself, and the wife needs to do it for herself in that particular context. In the context of Kiddush, you usually have one Kiddush in the house. The Kiddush is usually made by the man for the members of his household. Now, I'm aware of the fact that in some communities, there was someone, I'm aware because people tell me, I don't know, how do I know what's going on in the world? I don't know, that's why people come and say, I just went to such and such a place, and the woman made Kiddush for the husband or for the other, or whatever it is. So I said, strictly speaking, it's perfectly fine to keep it. Can I go to Shulchan Aruch? Shulchan Aruch says explicitly that the Umotzios is Ha'anoshim, that a woman can make Kiddush for the man. However, Mishnah Brewer says, you know, she shouldn't make Kiddush for the people who are not members of the household. But members of the household, nothing more than whatsoever. However, it seems to me that it's not keeping what's been done for all these years. I don't particularly go for it. Good question. Whenever these things happen, these things which you know which your grandmother didn't do, you have to always wonder why it's being done. You have to think very carefully what's the motivation, what's behind it, etc. And you have to be careful to know a lot of things, but that's going to take us too far afield. It's only the opening shiur. Let's stick a little closer to home, okay? We'll have time as we go to discuss many things, but let's now try to stick to the Kiddush practice. Okay.
May I ask, is the Shabbos morning Kiddush just as important?
No. Once a person makes Kiddush Friday night, that's the mitzvah of the Torah has been fulfilled, and the entire mitzvah of Kiddush in the morning is what we call rabbinic law, Kiddusha Rabbi.
So otherwise, you can Shabbos morning.
Who said that? No. I didn't say anything. I just said it's not as important in the morning as it is in the evening. We haven't gotten to details.
What's important?
What's important? Not as, this is something that's not as important. Doesn't mean it's not important.
I understand.
Okay. So this is the requirement of Kiddush. Again, Kiddush itself is a Torah law. Kiddush on the cup of wine, according to most authorities, is rabbinic law. Now, when we say Kiddush on a cup of wine, you have to understand, what does it mean a cup of wine? What's a cup? What's wine? These are basic questions. What do these things mean? So generally speaking, we assume the cup has to have what we call a revius. Revius is a shear, which is a quarter of a lug. Good question what a revius is, actually. Most authorities say revius it could be as little as approximately 3 ounces. Some say it should be much more than that, 4.5 ounces, 6 ounces, all kinds of very high numbers that are mentioned. But in my opinion, it could be as little as 3 ounces. How much must be 3 of this revius? The majority. A little more than 1.5 ounces. So it's not so bad, not so overwhelming. The person finds wine unappealing, then there's no problem. Just use grape juice. Grape juice is fine, nothing wrong with grape juice at all. Folks can say, especially for men, and I'm not sure about for women, that wine is somehow preferable wine. But if it's going to lead to any kind of misbehavior, you're better off with grape juice. Okay, because you can fulfill the mitzvah very easily and well and properly with grape juice.
Can you make it on flour?
Challah, you can make Kiddush on challah. Not everyone agrees that Shulchan Aruch you can make Kiddush on challah. But the post can say if you have wine or grape juice, that's preferable.
And that's made in Europe.
Of course, that's made in people in Europe that couldn't afford wine or grape juice, or they just couldn't have any at all, and they just made on challah. Sure. Yeah. Sure, sure. In Arabic culture, it's much more important to have wine as opposed to grape juice. Because Arabic culture is called derech cheirus, it's considered a manifestation of freedom. That consideration does not apply at all to Kiddush. The only reason why wine is preferred to grape juice in Kiddush is because the chinuch says that the Torah or the rabbis say to make Kiddush on wine, because wine is, quote, ma'orer u'mesameach. It sort of wakes you up and makes you happy. That's referring to the alcohol content of the wine. It doesn't apply to grape juice. So that's important a consideration in this regard. Right? Good. So now we know that there is a mitzvah to make Kiddush on wine or grape juice, if wine for some reason not so appealing, or not available, the case may be. And it has to be at least 3 ounces, you have to drink at least half of that amount. Right? Now, if there's no wine in town, there's no wine. You can't get wine. You can't get grape juice. She said you make it on challah. Right? That's true. It's better to make it on challah Friday night than anything else. However, on Shabbos morning, there's no wine in town and no grape juice in town, so you could make kiddush quote unquote on challah. But if you make Kiddush on challah on Shabbos morning, there's no way to discern that it's really called Kiddush. What do you do? All you do in the morning is say a bracha. I'll get a girlfriend, I'm a stuck with art. That stuff we say before, you know, whatever, shampoo, zon, that's just not mandatory. You know. That doesn't really count. At night, you make a bracha. Share it to the Shabbos, or else the run, kind of the Shabbos. But in the morning, there's nothing. So therefore, it's the Shabbanara facing the rush. In the morning, if there's no wine at all in town, no grape juice in town, you can make Kiddush what we call Chamar Medina, which means the wine of the country. Right? Whatever that country is using for its wine is adequate. What does the country use for wine? Well, maybe in such kind of beer is equivalent to wine. Whiskey is equivalent to wine. Some suggest perhaps even things like juice, maybe even soda, or maybe coffee or tea, or milk. It's a whole series of suggestions that can be made.
Well, they did make it in Europe on whiskey.
However, it seems to me that these devices, these drinks, these beverages, should only be used if you have no access to wine or grape juice. If there is access to wine or grape juice, you should certainly use them and not use other beverages. I'm aware of the fact that many Hasidic circles, they don't follow this. They will drink whiskey. No. I told them already. Didn't help. In certain Hasidic and apparently even non-Hasidic circles, right? The custom is that they make Kiddush and Schnapps Shabbos morning, not Friday night.
Not Friday night.
They make Kiddush and Schnapps.
But don't you have to have a reverse of that?
Well, that's another question. If you have Schnapps, how much Schnapps? You have a 3 ounce cup and drink half. But for the Rosemont, that's no problem. So for many people, that does become the problem. Either way, if they drink, it's the problem. If they don't drink, it's the problem. If they don't drink, it's the problem. Halacha. If they drink, it's the problem. You know, the head spin, right? So, but again, I don't recommend this at all. I'm very much opposed to this. People ask me, how can I oppose it when my great grandfather did it? You know, what can I do? I'm only saying what it says in the Svarim. In the Svarim, it says that if there's wine or grape juice in town, you shouldn't use any other beverage. I agree. They can argue, but I'm not saying it's the worst offense in the world, but it does say in Svarim that if there is wine or grape juice around, those are strictly preferable, and there is no such thing as Chamar Medina if there's wine and grape juice. Only if there's no wine and grape juice, according to most Rishonim, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's that way. Yes, there's a whole series of arguments raised to defend the minhag of the Hasidim. They make Kiddush on schnapps, even though there's wine in town. And I won't go into all the arguments now, but after all the arguments are said and done, not so great, not so simple. So you should make Kiddush in the morning on wine or on grape juice. That's the preferred way. No wine grape juice in town, that doesn't happen to us these days. It rarely happens, there's no wine. In other words, Reich of Medina. You don't have this kind of circumstances. That's why I'm not going to go into any laws in Shulchan Aruch. For persons and enough money for Kiddush and for the candles and for the chuppah. Thank God, we don't have these cases. So, I'm not going to go into these. Okay. Before Kiddush, one may not eat or drink. Now, I want to explain something. There are many mitzvahs before which you cannot eat or drink.
Or drink?
Yeah.
Friday night,
Rosh Hashanah. We got both. But most mitzvahs you can't eat or drink, it's primarily because you're going to forget. Sit down, have a big meal, you drink a lot of wine, you're going to forget. And therefore, the folks can say, number one, the small amount you're allowed to eat or drink. Number two, if you appoint somebody to remind you to do the mitzvah, you may be able to eat or drink. And there are other differences.
But you mean you may forget what?
Mitzvah. You're supposed to, you're supposed to bench lulav, you're supposed to light chanukah lift, all these kinds of things. You're not supposed to eat or drink before. But there's a small amount, or if it reminds you, or maybe set your alarm watch, goes off at a certain time, the post will say it's alright. When it comes to Kiddush, it's an intrinsic prohibition against eating or drinking before you make Kiddush, at night and again by day. And the reason for this intrinsic prohibition is as follows. That Kiddush is supposed to be the dividing line between your weekday food and your Shabbos food. There should be nothing at all that you eat on Shabbos before you make Kiddush. Now, Shabbos morning is a question. Hey, you already made Kiddush last night. But there are some authorities who maintain that on Shabbos morning there's no prohibition whatsoever eat or drink before Kiddush. Some say. Shulchan Aruch disagrees. Shulchan Aruch is even in the morning, you're not supposed to eat or drink before you make Kiddush. However, since there are some authorities who maintain that it's permissible, there are a number of ramifications. Number one, as far as women are concerned, some authorities are lenient. Say that a woman is permitted to eat and drink in the Shabbos morning before she makes Kiddush. One of at least two reasons. Perhaps in some cases three. Reason number one, some say there's no such prohibition in the first place. Number two, some say, it's a bit radical, but some do say it, that women are exempt completely from Kiddush in the morning. Some of the rice, Kiddush at night, they're responsible. Docha v'shamah. Kiddush in the morning, they're completely exempt. Moshe Feinstein's reason number three, which is radical, Kiddush, which applies to a married woman. If the married woman can eat before Kiddush because she's somehow responsible, whatever that means, to make Kiddush with her husband. I don't know what that means, frankly. I don't know what the word means.
Because her husband's going to make Kiddush, maybe then she doesn't.
Whatever it is, if she's somehow tied to her husband and the husband's not home yet, she can make Kiddush. She can eat and drink breakfast without having to make any Kiddush at all. Those are the three reasons which are given. Others are also given. And it gets more complicated as you go. But what if a person hasn't davened chakras yet? Aruch says before chakras, there's no obligation to make Kiddush.
You can eat before
Shabbos. Oh, you'll have to eat before Shabbos anyway. Right, supposed to daven first. Well, let's say somebody is sick and has to eat before Shabbos. There's no need to make Kiddush at that point. This is quite a controversial question. Is it true? Is it not true? What does the Shulchan Aruch say? But here it comes to women, it can get tied to another issue. Are women obligated to daven Shabbos? Not tonight. That's a very lengthy discussion we've had more than once. Some say yes, some say no. and this makes things complicated. If a woman is obligated to daven Shacharis, and she's before Shacharis, then she may assume she's permitted to eat before Shacharis the other 6 days of the week, which is again a controversy. But if she's not obligated to daven Shacharis, then she perhaps may not eat or drink before making Kiddush. Because you don't have to wait for Kiddush, for Shacharis, for the obligation to set in, as you do for men, because she's not obligated to Shacharis. So it gets awfully complex, back and forth. Bottom line, my psak on this follows. If a woman can make Kiddush before she has a breakfast, let's say, why not?
Before she's done?
Well, here's it again. Divide the bottom line in half, two bottom lines. The bottom line for women who are scrupulous and diamond chakras every day. And there's a bottom line for those who are not so scrupulous. You know, the Shulchan Aruch applies, you don't really have to daven every day. If they don't daven every day. So then, when they have their breakfast before, early in the morning, they wake up, then it's better to make Kiddush. What do you mean make Kiddush? Again, if they like grape juice, well, first thing should have. We have a grape juice, like a bar break off, and that's Kiddush. Now, even if you're not eating your full meal, you'll have a piece of cake. So as you learn in a few moments, a piece of cake is sufficient to qualify for the requirement which is known as Kiddush
B'makom
Suda. So Kiddush can do it in the same place as the same time of practice as having a Suda. Right? Even if you're having breakfast cereal, having Wheaties, also good enough. Not Rice Krispies and not Corn Flakes, right? Because those are just not from the five types of grain. But the Wheaties is, right? So you can have Wheaties and fulfill Kiddush Shavuot Suda. So you can have a couple of grape juice, and then you have your Wheaties. Let's say that you can't stand grape juice. You don't have any grape juice and want it too much for you. So maybe you can rely on those authorities, because I don't like it too much, and Kamar Medina is good enough. A cup of milk. So before you put the milk into the Wheaties, take off the cup of milk in your hand, take a shock on the drawer, check the milk, and then pour the, after drinking out the half of milk, and pour the rest into your bowl of Wheaties.
That's only for women.
A man
can't make that choice.
Well, for
I
men,
I don't like grape juice.
Even for women, if in the ideal world, they should also use grape juice, but. If men are drinking schnapps, how can I prohibit the milk for women? That would be unfair.
This is now a woman who's not going to daven.
Right, a woman who does daven, so before davening, if she drinks and eats all week long, for whatever reason, so then she could do so probably on Shabbos too. But if she doesn't, then she shouldn't. And she should make kiddush as soon as she finishes davening. So again, there are a number of different situations.
And there's some men who drink coffee
for
women who don't
daven. Oh. Coffee. There are some men who have a whole meal. They get coffee with cake.
Just the coffee.
Just coffee.
Well, a man who drinks coffee before he goes to shul every day. So that. Some they can get they're junkies, they're addicts. You listen to some of them. They're addicts. They're addicted to caffeine. They can't function without the caffeine. If you're addicted to caffeine and cannot function. So you can't daven, you can't move, you can't do anything, and you're allowed to have your caffeine, to satisfy your habits before you daven. That's true. So that's just a habit. It's just like shooting up. Satisfying a craving, which you can't do without. So if that's the situation you find yourself in, that may be done before Shacharis, before Kiddush, before anything. But there are other groups that are not so addicted. They sit there with their every day, and then cake, and all kinds of things, especially on Shabbos, because the davening takes longer, you have cake. I personally think it's terrible. All the ways, again, I can justify this also, but I certainly think in an ideal way it shouldn't be done. More than that, there are many people who all week long, they wouldn't have cake for davening. No, it's not right. But on Shabbos, what can I do? Until I get home from davening on Shabbos, it's 11 o'clock, it's 12 o'clock, I can't go so long. Without eating it, I just can't handle it. So I tell them, if that's the case, what you should do is daven at home, Shacharis, and then make Kiddush, and then come to shul for laning. I'm told that in Germany, there were many individuals who did that. Now, I can't tell everyone to do it because I'll have no minion left in shul.
There was a a Shiloh that was asked from a small town in Germany to the Würzburger Rub.
Right.
The only one in shul was the chazan and the rabbi in the morning.
And everybody
made davened at home, made kiddush. But when they come, what should they do? Make a hocha shmon esrei or?
See how far it went? Terrible. But in camp they do a different thing. In camp, where they have it, it's no problem. They daven shacharis,
and then everybody goes.
And everybody goes and makes kiddush and has breakfast. Talked before about Kiddush and Suda. These two are always linked together. Kiddush and Suda. Shulchan Aruch says that when a person makes Kiddush, he's supposed to have the challah covered. Although he doesn't have the Suda there, but the challah should be covered. And the question is, why should the challah be covered? talked before about Kiddush and Suda. These two are always linked together, Kiddush and Suda. Shulchan Aruch says that when a person makes Kiddush, he's supposed to have the challah covered. Although he's going to have the Suda there, but the challah should be covered. And the question is, why should the challah be covered? Why? What's the big deal? Why must it be covered? There's three reasons given for this halacha. One is the challah shouldn't be embarrassed. Challah is embarrassed. Well, challah is embarrassed because challah is supposed to come first. Eretz chita, usora, begefen. And now you make kiddush first, so it's embarrassed. Whatever that means. Or a more down-to-earth reason, that the table shouldn't be brought out. You have small movable tables till after you make kiddush. So the moving of the table should be considered for the purpose of Shabbos. We set up for the purpose of Shabbos to bring the table to another room, make kiddush, and then wheel it in or carry it in. A little bridge table. The table which had the challah on it, all those other things used to be brought into the dining room after you finished kiddush. That was the old custom. Mishnah, reveal the fun of us hashulchan. That was their old custom. Today our tables are too heavy. We don't have another room to put it in. So what we do is we sort of bring it in by how we bring it in. Unveiling, you know. It's there from before, but it's covered, and then you pick up the covering, so it's as if it wasn't there before. That's the second reason. Third reason is because it's to remind us of the mun. The mun was covered on top and covered on the bottom. So that's why the table's on the bottom, and the chalas, and then the tablecloth, the covering on top. Okay? So these are three separate and distinct reasons with differences. There are many differences between the three reasons. Anyone suggest a difference? Three reasons, which is all the same thing. What's the reason? No?
One is symbolic.
No, I want a practical difference.
Practical.
Yeah, sure. Shabbos what?
Morning.
Shabbos morning, afternoon. Which one did you mean? Okay, what do you mean?
Same thing.
You don't have to cover it on Shabbos afternoon.
Well, if it's the morning, then it would be the same as the night before.
Maybe. It's not so clear. But this point, let's go this way. If it's because of mun, then you have to cover it all three meals. If it's because of the mun, it should be covered until you actually make a motzi. If it's because of the mun, you only have to cover the two chalas, the lechem mishnah, which is a remembrance of the mun. Okay, that's for that reason. If the reason is that the bread shouldn't be embarrassed,
then you only
have to cover until after you finish making kiddush. Once you finish kiddush, you can remove the covering, right? Because there's no more embarrassment. You would not have to cover it at all for Shalosh Shudas, because there is no Kiddush. But, so what's good news? But the bad news then would be what?
And
you have to cover what? All bread and all
cake.
Cake. Cake is also made from wheat. Chita. We don't do that here. We have Kiddush for sure.
And what about
a sora? If you have barley cake, you have to cover that too. But now is on top of that. If the reason is because you want that the table should be as if it's not there until after you make Kiddush, which is the first reason we gave, you have to cover everything.
Yeah, well, we don't put anything.
We don't put any food out.
Okay, that's better. But if there is food out there on the table, hotel, you have to cover the challah, cover the gefilte fish, cover the fruit, and cover everything. So it's hard to know which reason is accurate. Different opinions which reason is accurate. I'm always partial to the reason of the mun. Mm-hmm. It's the most down to earth reason. The bread being embarrassed, they quote it from Yerushalmi, but we don't find it in our Yerushalmi. So it's a pseudo Yerushalmi.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a second. So it's because of the mun, you don't have to cover the cake. But of course, then you have to cover Shalosh Shudas too. You can't have it both ways. So I always try to cover the challah and shalosh shudas, but I don't cover anything else besides my two lechem mishnas.
There were other bread on the table.
I don't think I have to cover either. You follow the idea of the mun. Okay, that's in a Other
that's where all the meals are just shalashudas.
All the meals, sure. See, even shalashudas. Even shalashudas. Okay, so these are many differences which exist between the different opinions. Right? So these are very, very important things to know. Okay. Of course, if it's because of the money, you have to keep it covered until after the hamotzi. I think the money is the simplest reason. I can't say which is right. There's so many different reasons. The Yerushalmi is this, and the other reason is it's also a significant reason. I'm not saying it's wrong, chas v'shalom. But I think the custom is...
I heard all three reasons.
Now, Yontif, he finds the remembering of the man.
Right.
But if we have left a Mishnah on Yontif, then you should probably have to cover it on Yontif too. I think so. You do cover it on Yontif. Now, we mentioned before, you have to drink, going back to the drink of the Kiddush, you have to drink a Melol Lugma, or a majority of a Revius. Who has to drink? Some authorities say the person who makes Kiddush. Others say it could be anybody. Yet others say, as long as a below lugma is consumed, even if it's consumed by many individuals, I drink a little, you drink a little, he drinks, she drinks, they all drink a little bit together, so it's a majority of the reviews. Even that suffices. That's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. That should be avoided because it's very controversial. But now, we come to etiquette. Who drinks first? Who drinks first? How do you pour around the cups from one person? That's a very complicated story. So there are really two different ways how to handle this. One is that the person who makes Kiddush drinks and then passes the cup around. And everyone drinks in the main cup. Hygiene? Germs?
Yeah.
Right, so the doctor told me that if it's alcohol, it's okay. That's what he told me. Not considered to be so polite these days. So I don't recommend that too highly. There's a better way. And that is, the person who makes Kiddush, before he drinks, pours out to everybody who's around the table. There are five around the table, you pour five little cups, and then you leave yourself, you have to leave yourself a 3 ounces
right.
In your cup. Don't be so generous in your pouring. Make sure you leave a little bit, or a very big cup. Very big cup. 12-ounce cup. I don't know. If you pour for yourself into another cup, as long as you have 3 ounces in the cup, it's okay.
Right. If you pour for yourself from another cup, then you're not taking from the cup kosher brocha. That's why.
Does it have to be of that cup? Or it could be just
the third choice. I can pour out from the cup from the becher into another cup. And then pour from the becher for everybody else. So what do I gain by that? Nothing. I might as well pour from the becher straight out. Listen, I'm afraid I'll pour too much. You want to measure out the 3 ounces? That could be. I'm afraid I'll pour out too much, only myself 3 ounces. So I'll pour the first 3 ounces into a pre-measured cup.
You have to have 3 ounces, or you just have to have...
I'll have to drink an ounce and a half.
But
I have to drink an ounce and a half from a 3 ounce cup which contains 3 ounces.
Can't you add more even if you run out?
Yes.
I mean, from the bottle. They do that.
They do that.
The Rebbe.
Right.
Everyone's not fishing the Rebbe.
He just leaves a little
bit.
Right.
They keep pouring, and they keep pouring, and it was one molecule of the Rebbe's Kiddush stuff.
They keep pouring, right.
We don't. We try to avoid that.
What happens if the man with wine, and there are other people who want grape juice?
What's all that?
So do you wait before the... What do? You make another post, do you wait before the grape juice out until after
Kiddush
is made, you pour it out
before they want to drink grape juice. They can drink grape juice, that's a problem. As long as
they don't have to drink. They don't have to drink at all.
You pour it after Kiddush is made.
Yeah, sure.
Well,
if everybody has individual little grape juice by their cup, and then they
have
to make their own.
No, as long as they answer amen, and they hear every word that the person said Kiddush recited, and they didn't lose their concentration, they were focused, and they answer amen. The fulfillment of Kiddush drinking nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they drink grape juice, or they drink grape juice. They just had a little, they couldn't, could drink anything. No, not only grape juice. Whatever you drink is good. Okay?
And the person who makes Kiddush has to have kavana on all those little...
The general rule is whoever makes Kiddush, if he's the quote-unquote balabas, has in mind all the members of the family. It doesn't say explicitly and think it's
self-understood. No, yeah.
I had a fascinating question. I'm glad you reminded me. I was going to bring it up. In the following case in my house last month of Shabbos, my daughter had a friend. And I didn't notice that this friend was there. I yelled out, yeah, come in for Abdullah. So I come in for Abdullah, and I make Abdullah for everybody, and I have in mind for Abdullah, everybody's around, the members of the family. And then when they came up to the summit of the wine, I looked up, and lo and behold, there's my daughter's friend. So when I made Abdullah, I had her in mind too. We were wondering what would have happened if I wouldn't have looked up. I'm facing this way, and she was over there. I would have gone through the entire Abdullah, not knowing that she was in the room. Would she have fulfilled the mitzvah of Abdullah through me or not? I'm not sure what the answer is, because if I don't know she's there, how can you say that I have in mind to make Abdullah for her?
But if you say I have in mind for everybody in the room, do you know everybody who's, let's say, if you have a big oilam, you don't know who's there.
If the chav makes kiddush and shul, or then we'll discuss kiddush and shul next week. If someone makes kiddush and shul, you have in mind everybody, because you know you don't have everybody. So you have in mind everybody, you know them, you don't know them, no difference. If you have in mind the members of your family, because you know them, and if someone else is lurking in the shadows, you don't know who that person is, and you suddenly discover after you finish that she was there, so I'm not so sure that this person fulfilled the mitzvah.
Did you have made Abdullah again?
Well, we'll have to discuss that, because a man make Abdullah for a woman if he fulfilled the mitzvah already by himself.
Okay.
That's not recommended. Okay. We're not sure if she's obligated or not. So if she's not obligated, makes for her, it's not so good.
So if a man makes Abdullah in shul,
that's another very important question. If a man is Abdullah in shul, how can he make Abdullah for his wife later? The answer is, a man who hears Abdullah in shul should not fulfill the mitzvah. He should have explicit intention not to fulfill the mitzvah. So he can make Abdullah for his wife, because if the one who makes Abdullah in shul, you should put up a boy who's not married. So it shouldn't be a problem. That's a serious issue, but we come to Abdullah.
So why make Abdullah in shul?
Why? It's a good question.
You couldn't, because you made Abdullah in Shmon Esrei.
Right, so you can't do. Why make Abdullah in shul at all? In case of somebody who doesn't have any wine at home, who doesn't have a household, that's why you make Abdullah in shul. Okay? But you don't fulfill the mitzvah of Abdullah in shul if you're going to, you just have intention not to fulfill the mitzvah.
If you're, let's say, you intend to fill Havdalah in the shul, you're a woman, let's say, you intend to fulfill Havdalah, do you have to drink, smell psamim and all of that?
No, we'll get to later, so not
okay.
Psamim and the candle are just extras. You can fulfill the mitzvah without any psamim, without any candle whatsoever. Not so important, it's not so critical. Not bad, but it's not so critical. Okay? Alright, what kind of wine should you use for Abdullah, for Kiddush and Abdullah? If you're using wine, it should be preferably red wine. Better than white. Most people say if the white wine is
the better wine.
It's a better wine. So most authorities say it's better to have that wine. Others disagree. The Ramban says it's better, white wine is not even any good. Cooked wine, what about that?
Cooked wine.
Yayin Mavushal. The Shulchan Aruch says it's good, but some say it's no good. But the minhag is to use it. I tell people to only have Yayin Mavushal in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You never know who's going to come in, you're not going to be home, and there's this nap, and you have a shadow of Yayin Netzach. It's always good to have Yayin Mavushal. If a non-Jewish person pours wine, then that wine that was poured, and even the wine that's probably the clear wine that's left, is all prohibited to drink. So we don't want to get started up with that kind of case. We try to use a wine which is cooked. If wine is cooked, then there is no dinner of a mushla, so we assume. Okay. If he touches a sealed bottle, it's not a problem.
Okay,
you look, you're not looking. It's complicated.
Now,
we talk about Kiddush and Malkum Suda. What is the definition of a Suda? Some say Suda has to be bread, Most days, Suda can even be
cake.
I told you before, Wheaties, any which is Mizon, the after, have a Kazayas. Just a tiny bit of cake, a little cookie, of a Kazayas. And it's a big question. How do you measure a Kazayas? Do you measure a Kazayas of the final result of the cookie, or the cake? Or do you measure a Kazayas of the grain or the flour? Big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, chocolate chiffon, you know, with that little amount of flour in it.
Yeah.
That's a big controversy. I've always liked to follow the opinion that you need a Kazayas of flour. The Kazayas of flour, you have,
that's a lot of stuff.
If you're on a diet, and you want a Kazayas of flour to make your bracha, to make your kiddush, it's a big problem.
So how much?
I'm very make of a Kazayas. One fluid ounce. That's all. One fluid ounce of flour.
But that's
the two cups.
Sure you do.
Cups of flour. A cup is 8 ounces. So 1/8 of a cup. Does that sound better?
That's a big
1/8
piece
of a cup.
Cake.
That's big. Oh, if it's 7-layer cake, it's a whole cake probably. So the chocolate doesn't count.
I'm just thinking of my Shabbos morning cake.
The chiffon is pretty good.
I
would. Okay, it's 2 cups,
yeah.
16 ounces. You have to have 1/16 of the cake to make a kazak, to make an alamichion, and to be also kiddush b'chol suda. So they have the consultation. We have kiddush down here, and it's delicious layer cake. It's so appealing to my eye. I'm telling you, it's shenasha. The 7-layer cake and have that round stuff, you know.
With the
cream in it. Oh, mwah. I don't touch it. I'll never get a kazayas out of it. I have not even that.
Not that.
I have what they call kokosh cake. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. That's a thick,
dense.
So we figured out I have three of those.
Three.
That's what I was told. Two is probably good enough, but if you have three, you're okay for sure. So usually during the week, I try to avoid cake completely when I'm not in the middle of a meal. You know, I'm afraid to get involved in these shilas, but kiddush downstairs, so I'm going to do it. I have to have it.
Have in mind, let's say you hear kiddush.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't kiddush. You have a wedding Monday night. I can't stay Tuesday night because I'm going to go back to kitchen stir. So we can, in theory, have it next. Right, that's what we assume. There is an opinion.